Football is more than just a game. It's a powerful tool for change. It empowers women to find their voices, break barriers, and fight for their rights. Together, we can change the world, one goal at a time.
Dear team, I know we've had a couple of English episodes recently, but this one is really an episode that I am begging you to listen to until the end. Before we go any further, though, I should mention a trigger warning because we do cover some really harsh, even brutal experiences that she has been through. But our new team member has the single most incredible life story I've ever heard. It will make you think differently about life, motivation, perseverance, and purpose, about society, refugees, and justice, and most of all, the true power of sports. And guys, maybe this is the most inspirational and even meaningful episode I've ever recorded for Team Lisa. And I really feel like this is the story, or these are the stories that we can learn from, that we can take the push from to do whatever we truly want to do. Because if she can follow her dream, we can follow ours. Please go and check out the show notes for more info about her organization, or in case you want to support her in any way, reach out if you feel like sharing your thoughts on this episode with us. And always please follow if you enjoyed what you heard. And now, my guys, this is truly why I started this podcast. So now get ready for our new rock star team member. This is Khalida Popal. That truly is a wonderful quote, and maybe you can share with us why it means so much to you.
Thank you so much. Football, for me, growing up in a male-dominated country like Afghanistan, war-torn country where women and girls have nearly no voices and they don't have their basic fundamental human right, football for me played a major role in my life. I found my voice and my platform and power as an activist, as a woman, through this platform to stand for my right, but the right of other girls and sisters in my country, but now also worldwide. So my mission and purpose is to be the voice for voiceless sisters who need a platform and a voice. And I have been using that, so I'm always grateful for that.
And I am so excited that we can dig deeper into your work and everything that you've been creating, really. And before we start, my guests always get to introduce themselves in my episodes. And I always like them to kind of use, you know, the image of a FIFA card. Like if you looked at the FIFA card, like in the game where it says, I don't know, pace, physicality, blah, blah, blah. Like regardless of the football stuff, what would be on your card?
Defender.
Who's the person?
Defender, defender on the pitch and defender outside the pitch, for defender for the human right, for women right. That's how I define myself and introduce myself. I played as a football defender on the pitch, defending the goal and supporting my team. And also outside the pitch, I've been standing for the right of our sisters and for women right as a human right in Afghanistan, and now worldwide for refugee right and right of people.
How did you even get into playing football, Khalida? Because as you said already, in a country in Afghanistan where especially women are denied basic human rights, it's not necessarily the thing you think of first when, starting a hobby as a girl.
It came quite naturally because my story is not very different than the story of any girl anywhere where they start football playing with their brothers and they find passion in football. That's what I did. So as a girl child, I started playing with my brothers because football is quite known in Afghanistan as first game. And I have brothers and have no sisters, so it kind of came quite naturally. At a certain age, I was able to play football without being questioned. But then after a certain age, when I grew up more and become teenager, then my body changed, right, to becoming more a woman, and that's where the problems and challenges started, being pressured and questioned for my gender, why I'm playing football, why I should be in the kitchen supporting the mom, learning how to cook and clean, than being on outside and playing football. Football is not for the girls. That's how I have been facing the pressure and challenge, but also helped me to understand the real challenge that were waiting for me and any other women and girls like my age group. So that's how I started playing football with the boys, and then later on, from like having a passion for the game, from playing for fun, to finding my passion in football, then understanding the challenge and kind of having a purpose. I found my purpose when I faced challenge. I faced problems just because of my gender, just because I was a girl and it was questioned. So then football, my passion become my purpose, and my purpose to use sport and mainly football, because it's known as a man's game and it's a great, strong, provocative tool to use it to showcase the power of women and kind of also send out the message that sport, education, and any human rights are equally for everybody. So it's not just for men. It's sport and education is for both men and women, and we should not exclude women from the society.
You said that you were being questioned as soon as you were, developing a rather female body. I can imagine that those people questioning you were, on one hand, probably the boys you were playing with on the pitch, but other people from the outside. How did that change your game? I mean, you said so beautifully, the challenge made you find your purpose, and that's so powerful. But, like, what did that mean for your day-to-day relationship with football? How did you continue?
In the beginning, I continue to kind of ignore and focus on the game and play and continue playing with the boys in the streets. But then it got to kind of like to level where it was no more safe even for the boys that they were playing with me, because they were younger boys. My brothers are younger than me, so they were facing these challenges. They were harassed and abused, and they were bullied for not being a real man, for letting me to play. So that was the kind of as young child, and that's how we all face those challenges. Like I wasn't even a teenager at that time. So then I stepped down from playing with my brothers, and for a period I went undercover to another club, because that wasn't girls' club, football club there. So I went undercover and played with the boys in another football ground, and was like
Wait,
I had to
wait, wait.
report
What
that.
does that mean? Undercover how? Did you cut your hair? Did you play with a cap, or undercover in what way?
Yeah, so I hide my hair under the cap, and then I start wearing this very extra large clothes than my size, baggy clothes, baggy pants, and so in people could rarely see a girl, and I started and kind of I also pretended and acted that I'm deaf and I can't talk and listen. So they were feeling sorry for me, and they thought like I'm a young boy, teenager, and I started playing with them, and until they found out that so I was only the coach knew, and coach allowed me to go there.
Wow.
So then I was attending the trainings, like 5 minutes later than everybody. So then to avoid any kind of like interactions, any kind of discovery if the boys were curious on who am I. And then I was leaving the training session 10 minutes earlier than everybody else, so to avoid any kind of interaction. But, you know, football is a game of joy and happiness. And then you shout, you scream, and you... So I had to kind of hide everything. I had to silence myself and shut my voice to be able to continue playing football. But it didn't take longer time because some boys were so curious and they followed me to school, and they found out that I went to girls' school, and so, and then my identity was exposed, and so I couldn't go back to the team, and so then I decided to start women's and girls' football and a whole movement, because I was questioning that there must be more girls like myself who loves to play football, but they, due to these challenges, they can't participate. So I will go and figure out that I identify them, and we will make our own team, and we'll continue playing football. So that's how the whole movement creation of the first Afghanistan women's national team took place. From that time that we started, I started going to the classes and found one of my classmates, and then one of my schoolmates. And then, like, we were 4-2, and then we were 4, and then we kind of, like, got to 2 teams again. We were playing against each other. And my mum, that was the advantage on our side, that my mum was the PE teacher, so it was easier to get access to some of the girls who are interested in the sport. So we started the whole movement, whole campaign to get girls into football. And so we ended up going to different schools, not only from our schools, but different schools. But then it was one of the kind of turning moment for, awakening moment for me was as a teenager, that when we were, I thought, okay, now we have girls' football. We will play in a school. There was no kind of idea of having a national team or playing a league. I wanted to have fun. That was my passion. I wanted to enjoy being outside, enjoying just kick about. But then when we were attacked at school by gunmen and by some men who were jumped out from the wall of the school that we were playing in, the yard of school and backyard, and then they had a knife with them, and then they destroyed the ball that we were playing. And then they were screaming and yelling on us and telling us that we belong to the kitchen, we can't walk properly, how can we play sport? And all those bad words that they called us, and bad woman, whores, all those kind of challenges that we faced. And so that was a kind of awakening moment for me. Understood that how serious is this societal challenge and barriers waiting for us and standing on our way. And so coming from a very privileged and supportive family to understanding the challenge in the community was a tough one. And for me, that moment was like, of course, in life, sometimes we do have options to give up and to continue what the rest wants you, or to actually stand up for your right and say, hey, I want to create my own path. I want to have my own identity. I want to take my own decision, and I want to feel, I want to stand again, and then I want to change the narrative that's written about us. And that's what I did as a young teenager. Took the ball and said, this is my purpose. And I'm not giving up. I'm continuing my campaign. And that's how we started our first league. And from the first league, we had our first women's national team that I had the privilege and honor to be one of the founding members, and played in the first Afghanistan women's national team. And then from there continued the whole movement and development of women's football from grassroots to the national teams, youth teams.
Which is just so incredible to hear. I would love to go back one second to the moment that you just described. You guys were playing in the schoolyard, you know, just amongst yourself, having fun. And then men were coming in, jumping from the walls, harassing you guys. Were these random guys from the streets, or was this already like a political situation?
No, it's you know, the country like Afghanistan, who been through war, for decades of war in the country, of course takes identity from a country, from a culture. It's it changes the mindset of people. Mm-hmm. It changes the whole mindset about especially women and girls and around the world, you know, climate change, the war, security. All the political situation that changes, women and girls are the first one, kids are the first one who are vulnerable in and victims of such changes. That has happened also in Afghanistan. 8 years of Taliban not allowing women in Afghanistan to even get out of their home without being accompanied by a man. Not being able to study and go to school, and all of a sudden, after the fall of Taliban from the control of Afghanistan and return and the kind of the control that the international allies came, and then NATO come to Afghanistan, the Western world basically kind of got involved in Afghanistan. That has also allowed a little bit women and girls to develop and grow and have access to sport and education and also participate actively in the society. But it was so new for the society. It was so fresh for them from seeing no women even in the neighborhood and seeing young girls playing football. So it was the man in the society. It was just a ordinary man around the school who were standing. So the Taliban is, no matter what, Taliban and group of Taliban, they hate women. They hate participation of women. They hate women being in the society. They see women only to serve man. Anything else, they don't see women to be capable of anything. So then it's the society that was prevented from development and education. So that's kind of like the ordinary man in this outside school who wanted to beat us and abused us, harassed us, which is sad.
And I mean, you just casually described your way from that very moment to deciding that you want to fight for what, you know, ignites your fire and your passion within, to founding the first ever Afghan women's national team. But I can imagine that, especially if you guys can't even play in peace a regular game of football in some schoolyard, that you can't just go ahead and found a team like that. What were the biggest challenges as you, you know, fixated on your goal and wanted to start a league or a team? How was that journey for you?
It was the toughest journey. It was in so many ways extreme, dangerous. It was, we faced harassment, abuse. People were calling us whores, and even some of the families that found out that we are playing football, they stopped their daughters to go to even a school. They were abandoned at home. Some of our teammates were because they were hidingly playing football with us, and they secretly they were playing with us, and they didn't tell their families or the man in the family. When the man found out, they were prevented from going to school, to any social activities, and they were forced to arrange marriages. So those were the kind of the extreme that some of our teammates faced, and that's horrible. And so with that, also in the society, we were like street harassment were there. And even some of our school teachers that were women, so it's not only men, even the women were against our sports activities, and they were for many times. I remember how many times that I was slapped in my face without any reason, just because my school teacher thought that I'm promoting a Western culture and non-Islamic culture in Afghanistan, and grab me from my hair and slapping me on the face in front of everybody. And I was on my 11th or 10th grade, so insulted me in front of everybody, saying how I'm a bad woman or a bad girl, trying to kind of promote the non-Afghan culture. So all those kind of things that we face. But you know that when your purpose is not about yourself, what your mission is not to only serve yourself, but it's bigger than yourself, and it's about being the voice for your sisters who lost or who never owned their voices. So those challenges don't come bigger than the challenges that they faced or they were facing in that time in the country. So that was kind of the whole motivation of like not giving up, and not giving up, and keep being motivated. And so every time that in every news broadcast, in local news broadcast that we were listening to, we were one of the in every news there was a news about women being beaten or killed or stoned or forced to marriage or put on fire. So this was everyday news, and you were listening to violence women are facing, domestic violence and abuse women were facing in the society. So you could not just sit and do nothing. For me, my power was football, and I wanted to do that, and I wanted to kind of find a way to fight and still kind of tell those sisters that, hey, we are there. We are trying everything possible to fight these barriers. So those were the kind of one of our main biggest challenges that we were facing, and the whole belief that girls belong to the kitchen and belong to the service and not to the field. That was another challenge that we were facing.
I mean, I grew up in Germany, right? And there's no situation like it. So I hear the stories. I mean, I try to read, I try to educate myself on certain topics. But like hearing it from you makes me so emotional and makes this like brings this whole situation so much nearer to me. And we speak so much about finding our purposes and stuff like that, right? But hearing you finding your purpose in the face of like physical danger, they could have punished you for doing this. They could have, I don't know, taken your life to state an example that this is not a thing that you or a woman should pursue. I wonder how you dealt, like, internally with this really big threat for your life? Was like your fear ever bigger than the motivation, than the, you know, than the will to fight?
The whole journey wasn't like free of fear. It was so scary. It was risky. It was not just about me, but also my family that were involved in that. So I remember during the whole campaign and movement that we started, and then the first Afghanistan women's national team was founded and was official, and we represented Afghanistan. So we got the attention of media. So media become our second tool to be the voice for our sisters, to use that to send out the message. We rarely talk about football. It was more about our right. It was more about our sisters. It was more encouraging girls to stand for their right. About the topics of abuse and harassment and the culture barriers that were standing on the way of girls to participate actively in society, and also how the corruption and abuse of power was preventing women from the society participation, active participation in society. So this wasn't free of risk. And seeing young women sitting, doing interview and talking about these topics were so new in the society that they were not ready to listen. They were not ready for their daughters and sisters and even women in the family to listen to a young woman speaking such topics. So it was a threat for many men in power to see that, especially in a male-dominated and patriarchal culture that has impacted negatively women in society. So this was we're kind of involved so much risk that I was receiving, I started receiving phone calls, messages on my phone, and so many. And even like men were standing in my way, like going to school or going to college, university, or to work, and threatening me to stop, otherwise I will be killed or I'll be raped, and threatening my family, my father, my mom, my brothers. Even they were facing tremendous challenges at school. They were beaten at school just for being bullied, that they are not real men, and they are allowing their sister to go to football and be active in football. And then when I become the first woman employee or the first female employee and the first female director in Afghanistan Football Federation at a very young age, where before me there was no women in the whole organization. So I was the very first one, and that was, of course, itself brought to this whole attention and kind of the risk to my life, that who is this woman and what that does she want, and she is getting like now the director position there. And so then the more my profile was getting more attention, the more the risk was towards my life and my family. It was scary, it was dangerous, it was the nights that I remember being so afraid and scared that I couldn't even talk to family and tell them how scared I am from man standing on my way, threatening my life, to receiving phone calls, someone insulting me so bad, and not being able to sit with someone, because what I was so scared was like, if I tell my family what I'm facing, then they'll love me, protect me from, prevent me from what I want to do, from a mission, from a purpose, to serve the community, to be the voice and to make change. And so I ended up crying evenings, and my pillow was my friend, and then I was crying until I was falling asleep. So that's how I spent most of the time, crying and falling asleep. Then it was so risky, and so the death threats, and I was physically attacked many times by the gunman out there. And there was attempts of gunshot. I was very lucky that I survived and managed to escape. And overnight, my life changed.
What does that mean exactly? I actually don't know your whole story until now, so I'm learning like as we're speaking. I know that you're not in Afghanistan right now, and I know that you define yourself a refugee. So I imagine that you left the country because of the increasing dangerous situation for your life.
Yes, so there was there were many attempts of people like threatening me, and even as I said, that the attempts of gunshot that I survived. And then there was also this whole kind of provoke group of people that were provoking the public against my activism, saying that I'm promoting the non-Islamic culture. Non-Islamic culture and non-Afghan culture, which provoked people as well. That was kind of, I was seen as someone threatening their religion and the culture, which was quite scary itself. So it made it very difficult to continue living there. I had to, anyone that was like a police case that I'm against the national security, and so that was so many of those challenges that was trying to stop me, and my brothers were physically attacked. So I had to, and I lost one of my family members. One of my brothers was shot dead.
Because of this situation?
Because of the whole situation, the whole family profile. So I had to escape my way and live underground, and then to one of the nearest country and kind of the country that I could manage to get in a very short time visa was to India. So I lived there a little for a while, and
for how long?
Not
when was this?
For a few months, and I was not sure that I was I was where I will end up, but the only hope I had was that I'll return back when the situation calmed down.
Wait, were you by yourself too?
I was by myself alone, and I was, I had my 23rd birthday in while I was underground, running and figuring out what to do with my life and what is next and what is the destination, next destination. No plans, nothing. I had my backpack. That's it. I left everything, no time to even say goodbye to the loved ones, to the family. Almost lost everything. And the only thing that I had with me was my purpose and my mission. And I didn't want those people to take my voice and to kind of, I didn't want the young, whoever. I was thinking if a young girl listened who were following my journey, if she listens to a news that I'm shot dead and I'm killed, she may never be inspired or kind of even be there to think that she could be me one day. She could stand and be the voice. So I didn't want that. So I was so protective of my voice and my activism And that was the reason I had to leave my country. And then become refugee. I was very, very lucky. Once again, grateful for football because it saved my life. When I say football saved my life, and I mean it because of the network through football, the people I was connected, they were the ones who saved my life and helped me to get out of that situation. I didn't know what to do when I left Afghanistan. I didn't know where I'm going, what will happen to me, what is next. And then people found out that my network found out, that I'm living underground in India, not having any documents, not sure, not even being sure what happened. So, and then, reached to you, to Denmark, and I left in some asylum centers, in refugee centers in Scandinavia, as a refugee, asylum seeker, stateless. So I've been all this through all process of and journey of a refugee and someone who is stateless and someone who is leaving a home and a country and an identity and everything, and then become nobody. So that's what kind of I ended up being in refugee centers and being traumatized. I've been through depression, trauma, PTSD, and all those where I had thoughts of finishing my life at some point because I could not carry the pressure anymore. And I was suffering from depression, and mental health issues, questioning everything, questioning my as a natural, as something natural that any human being, when they go through this, will question things around. But I'm glad that at the refugee centers, I was connected stronger than ever with my purpose, and that was to serve humanity and use whatever power I have, if it's sport or it's education, it's my voice to empower others, to support others, to be there for others. And for me, sport's been always a great tool to connect with people, and even in the refugee centers, and to build my own community, a family, a sense of belonging to a community. That's how it helped me to, no matter where I am or where I am from, I can still continue serving people and living my purpose. And that's kind of like the reason I don't see myself just belong to one country or one continent or one region. I see myself as a global citizen.
I love that. As you were describing your very low point in that refugee center in Denmark, or you said Scandinavia too, I thought of our category that we have here. It's called a head coach. So you kind of answered it already, but I always like to ask my guests who or even what it could be an activity is their main head coach in life, in situations like these, what helps them, find back into the light, basically. Would you say that football is your head coach? Or were there people helping you too?
I think when it's kind of, I would say, first thing will be kind of the mindset, right? If you kind of say to yourself, hey, I'm not the only one going through this. There are so many people. So I'm not only one. And what is my tool then to overcome this challenge? For me, it was football. For someone else is music, for someone else is singing, for someone else is just kind of putting their boots, their runners, and then run. It's about the mindset, right? I'm not the only one. And it's not about, even in any situation, if you are in the lowest or your peakest or highest in your life, you can't just say it's all about me. It's never about only me. The whole thing in this world is not just about you. And if you stop thinking about that, you see around, it's about everybody. And you're not on the only one you're going through. Someone went through what you're going through. Someone is going through exactly, but in an extreme way, or their own, on their own phase. But how, what is it that we can use it to overcome those barriers and those challenges, to support each other, but also to inspire others? Giving up, the option of giving up is always there. But what are the other options? And we just need to kind of leave that option, kind of recognizing that there is a, actually we do have an option of giving up. But let's just put it as the end. And what else is there? What are the other options? Because I do have that option anyways. That's yeah. There. What are the other options that I can just choose to do something else?
That's a really, yeah, powerful way to think and approach basically every challenge that comes, that life throws at you, really. I found a really lovely quote of yours. You said, "A refugee is someone who survived and who can create the future." You really feel like you will create the future now?
Yes, the whole story and my life story is this quote, right? Someone who survived all those challenges, and someone who came out from those barriers and found a stronger identity. And today who I am, I'm a proud refugee. I own it. I own that the title. Because it helped me to understand, learn, and it's a privilege. And of course, it's sad that you lose everything or almost so many things in your life, but it comes also as a privilege. So I see it that way. And the other thing is that it's the future, right? I am living the future. I'm living now and I'm living the future. I'm taking my part and I'm playing my part in this world, because I feel like we are all in this world pieces of puzzle. We are not the whole puzzle. So I am trying to kind of like keep my part the best, so not the puzzle won't be missing. And so I always say to the teams and the groups I coached and supported that if we play our best and our part, we can make difference in the world. The world needs all of us, not only one or two. We're all heroes in our stories, but we can also be villains in our stories to the world as well. So it's playing our part the best way possible to create change in our life, in the life of people around us, and also in the community and the world.
I love that. And I really loved how you said, "I am living the future. This is my reality right now, living in the future." And maybe you can like elaborate from that part where your movement is at this point. I know you founded an organization now that's called Girl Power. And maybe you can share with us the current work that you're doing supporting the girls over there in the Afghan national team as well. And I think they need a lot of support too, because they had to leave the country as well, right?
Yeah. So after living in refugee centers and being active in the refugee centers, working with women in the refugee centers to overcome the depression and the stressful situations that is the women are and people, refugee people are going through, which is the toughest environment, right? Being in an unknown situation, unknown future waiting for you. It's the toughest any human being can go through. So I started using sport in the refugee centers to support women and girls there, help them to learn how to do sports, for example, bike, how to learn to bike, how to do swimming, and how to also kind of like how we can play sport without being a professional athlete or being very serious athletes. And how can we play, how can we combine music and sport together? So that's what I have been doing and testing and in the refugee centers. When I got permission to stay in Denmark, I founded GAPA organization. GAPA organization, is more than an organization, it's a movement, it's a global movement that is creating opportunities for women and girls through sport and education, to connect with the communities, to change their own narrative, to also create a sisterhood community, a space where they feel safe, empowered, and uplifted through sport and education. Meaning, what we are doing is sport sessions in different communities that we are operating. It started in Denmark, expanded in different countries in Europe, in Afghanistan. So as my give back project to Afghanistan, to women of Afghanistan. So we've been supporting grassroots initiative and also the national team football, but also other sports in Afghanistan. And now we are also in African countries, so Nigeria, hopefully soon in Ghana, in other African countries, connecting with several women and girls. We're attending conferences, organizing events that is around and about advocacy, using sport for empowerment, climate action, or for, you know, gender discrimination or rights of refugees. In 2021, unfortunately, when the country collapsed in the hand of Taliban once again, the Taliban took control. Our role changed from supporting and bringing resources to the women and girls in Afghanistan for development in sport to advocating for their life and helping them to be evacuated from Afghanistan, lobbying governments, bringing communities together, individuals from around the world to be able to evacuate. So as a result, what we did was, with the support of media, politicians, individuals, advocates from around the world, we managed to support more than hundreds of women and girls. The national team of Afghanistan, women's national team, our first squad and the youth squads, and several other coaches and referees and activists with some of their family members evacuated from Afghanistan into safer countries in Europe, Australia, Canada, and some other European countries. And now they are refugees. We are helping and supporting them in their resettlement and kind of like finding their new identity, engaging and integrating in new communities. That's what we are playing the role. We are supporting in Afghanistan. We are supporting some secret underground sports activities where women and girls are active, which is unfortunate. A tough situation, but that's what the girls and women want. So we are engaged to support, and that's where we need really help and support of people to help us to support them and create resources and opportunities for them. I'm also active in my advocacy, giving speeches in different events, and using sport and kind of example of why athlete activism is important, why activism is important, and how can we use different tools that we have as our power as an individual to make difference and change. So right now, one of the campaigns I'm leading is the recognition of the Afghanistan women's national team by FIFA, and allowance of the Afghanistan women's national team who are living in exile to be able to play international FIFA tournaments representing the women of Afghanistan. So our girls are now living in exile. They have lost their rights to represent Afghanistan since they become refugees, and we are trying to get FIFA on board to recognize the team.
How is that going?
It's unfortunate. Things in this side of the world is moving so slow. So we've been facing for almost 2.5 years, 3 years, ignorance and from the governing bodies of sport. We have been, our girls been missing the opportunities and chances to play in international FIFA tournaments, important tournaments that they could represent Afghanistan. We continuously be reaching to FIFA. Now we have been able to at least find a way to have a conversation, but things are moving so slow. What I'm very sad is that it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time and resources and chances. And our players who are living in exile desperately want to gain back their recognition, to be able to have their power to represent and be the voice of our sisters in Afghanistan, that every day they are losing their fundamental human rights.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, there's just so much going through my mind right now. I'm thinking about everything you're saying too. Yeah, I dearly hope that FIFA will open the door for you guys. That would mean a lot. Like, even as you're saying it, like, all this is the purpose of only promoting football, right? A game. You're risking your life for a game. And this is proof. You're the living proof that it's not just sports. That it's life. Yeah. That it's joy. And that joy can be the crucial factor to a person to survive, to enjoy life. So yeah, you're doing great, great work there, Khalida. Okay. And as you were saying that, I was pulling out our next category. This is the German word for throw-in, because I feel like what you just said could have been a great extra topic already. But yeah, maybe you have something else that you feel really deserves a stage.
Well, I would with the whole situation going around the world, right? One thing is the Afghanistan Afghanistan women in whole, like, right? What's happening in Afghanistan is so bad, and it's so much against human rights. Gender apartheid in Afghanistan is just there. The world, how the media is changing their narrative, moving from one topic to another topic. It's crazy that where the world was involved in Afghanistan, everybody was talking about Afghanistan, and now the world has turned their face for the women of Afghanistan. Women of Afghanistan are let alone by themselves, fighting alone, with nobody being supported them. I would love to encourage anyone out there listening to us to be the voice for the Afghan women who are imprisoned in their homes and their just for just being women. The only punishment, the only crime they have done is just be a woman, and that's their punishment, what they're facing. And they can't go to school, they can't do anything. And they're forced to be at home, they're forced to marry, they're forced to kind of accepting domestic violence. Gender discrimination is there and nobody's actually questioning. That's what I would encourage people to use their platforms, to use any power that they have to question the governments out there, out here, that who is still trying to kind of recognize Taliban in one way or another way. And then it's our ongoing campaign for the recognition of the Afghanistan women's national team. It's against the status of FIFA. It's against the all the ethics and rules and laws of sport. Gender discrimination is happening in sport, and we are witnessing, and nothing is happening. And also, I hope that my story has been inspiring others to see within themselves and within their environment what is their power, what is their passion, how that passion power can connect together in a phase of purpose, and how they can contribute and do their best in the community for themselves, but also for the community, to become role models, to play a good role in the community. That's what I would hope people will get out of it, and I'll throw this to people.
Yeah, and I mean, I can assure you that you're definitely inspiring and a motivation and a role model to so many people out there. Thank you so much for being this important voice for so many girls. And that's also why you wrote your book, right? My Beautiful Sisters, yeah. Or what exactly is that about?
My Beautiful Sisters is my memoir that is about my journey, but through my journey, history of Afghanistan, the creation of Afghanistan women's national team, about that movement, about the how a spirit has created a sisterhood and empowered women to own and gain the voice and platform to stand for their right and to be a great example around the world. And the stories and sacrifices and resilience and fun and enjoyment. So it's not just sad stories, but fun and joy in the stories about how football can be a powerful tool in those communities. And it's the stories of my beautiful sisters. I always refer that's to any women and girls that we have been working through football. I've been connected in the national team, but also outside the national team.
That's really nice. Can I buy it in Germany too? Is it a internationally available book?
Yeah, it's internationally available book. It's online and you can buy it from Amazon UK. But hopefully at some point it will also reach to Germany and other countries around the world, because that's my hope, and is that story deserves. It's not only my story, but the story of so many people around the world. It's not just the story of women in Afghanistan, but anyone who identify themselves into that story, it is about them. So I hope that the story reach to so many people, because it deserves the attention, it deserves the kindness and love from the people.
Just a random other question that just popped up. As you went to India way back right now to leave Afghanistan, you said your family didn't come with you. Are you in touch with them at this point? Are they still in Afghanistan? Did you reunite in Denmark?
Yeah, we reunite with the family. I'm glad that part of my family is in Denmark and part from around the world. Of course, this is the journey of refugees, that you live, like you become a global family. So your family members are all over the world. I'm glad that they are outside of Afghanistan and they are safe. But it took a while until we were reunited.
I can imagine. Okay. I was just thinking, though, you shouldn't be without your family anymore. So that's good to hear. All righty, Khalida, we have one last category. It's called the shootout, kind of like a penalty shootout. I have a couple of rapid questions for you. You can answer quickly or take your time to answer. No rules here. All righty. Obviously, I stalked you a little, so I would like to know now, who was more exciting to meet, Malala Yousafzai or Natalie Portman?
It's a tough one, because it's a very tough one. I I was like, I would say I'm extremely grateful for everyone who joined and brought their kind of power and platform to give attention to the topic. I think that's what I would say. I was excited to anyone from little, having a little platform to bigger platform, who said, yes, this story, this campaign deserve the attention, and we are there to support.
Lovely answer. And I mean, your job today involves a lot of traveling, a lot of public speaking. You have a really cool TED Talk everyone should check out as well. What do you say is the most fun part about your job today?
Meeting amazing, crazy young women. That make me even younger. That takes away the whole like frustration in the world, frustration and about injustices. Every time I meet them, it gives me energy, it gives me power, I feel like young. I feel young, and then I go crazy through our programs. I meet them, I hear their ideas and crazy ideas, and how amazing these young women are, and especially the young generation. It makes me hopeful for the future. And even like now, you see, I have a smile on my face and I have energy. I love them. It's crazy. They are crazy. Sometimes even when I dance with them, and then I realize, oh my God, I have so much pain in my body. I forgot that I'm not the same age. They have so much energy.
I love that. Are you rather on the road or rather at home?
I would love balance. There are times that I want to just be home, especially when it hits December, November, December. I get so tired that I sometimes feel like I need to call the world. I'm sick, I can't get out of the bed. But this is also shows that I need to kind of like be more careful of my mental health and well-being. It's not good role modeling when you don't like kind of save your energy and manage your energy and find a balance. But hopefully I will get there eventually.
It's a learning process. It is.
I've been saying this for years now.
What is your favorite place to travel to in the world, though?
Many places, but I would say Africa. I would say for now, like after visiting Nigeria.
Nigeria? Oh my God, I've never been. What's so special about it? Why is that your favorite place?
I think this whole energy out there and kind of like music, dancing, and Nigeria, Ghana, where I've been there. Seeing people, how great, like kind of being from Afghanistan, living in kind of like that continent, right? Asian continent. And I've traveled a little bit around there. And then being in Europe, traveled a little bit around here, and then traveling to Africa. None of them, like Africa is the whole continent, so huge, but being in 2-3 countries there, it's kind of comparing how people, no matter how tough life is, but people still manage to dance and love and make jokes and be happy and grateful for little things in the life. That's kind of the real connection of you with the nature, with the, the kind of, with the nature, with everything. That's reality of human beings.
That is so beautiful. Okay, Nigeria and Ghana. I'll take them down on my list. Do you have a favorite soccer club, men's or women's?
Oh, that's tough one. I have been to so many, and I mean, there's like one. I'm also a bit competitive, right? So I love winning. I love this competition, this toughness. So I would say, for example, in Premier League, sometimes it's like the whole Chelsea thing, right? So now the Chelsea women's team, and after Emma Hayes, how she managed to get like the world's attention to Chelsea, and so I would say Chelsea. But then it comes to the clubs that's very purpose driven, how great inclusive environment they have. And I've met and I've been invited to so many amazing clubs, football clubs. I felt welcome, I felt love. So I would say there's so many. It's difficult to kind of name one. I've recently been in Aston Villa, where I felt like they took my heart. They,
Oh, it's so
the whole
cute.
like the whole like employees and staff there, fantastic. I really love. I fall in love with the with their whole coaching and all this kind of environment. I loved it.
All right, so we're taking down Chelsea women's team and Aston Villa, everyone. That's good. What's your favorite workout when not playing soccer?
Oh, swimming, going to the gym, paddling, paddleboarding,
Yeah. Stand up.
yeah, stand up paddle, yeah, anything water, I think,
Ah, cool. Anything
water
water.
sport,
Sounds good.
yeah.
And then would you say you're rather on a football pitch or on a stage?
Football pitch. I
Your
think it's
face.
kind of like, you know,
You're like, what the fuck?
it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of like, you know what I love about the kind of the whole like going on a stage is that just right before like you enter the stage, you have the exact feeling as kind of going into like going up the tunnel, players tunnel to the pitch. That kind of feeling that you have, you're excited. I don't want to call it nervous. I don't like this word nervous, but
Yeah,
excited about
excitement.
the whole like game and everything. So no matter what will happen, you don't know, you don't have control. You just go in the stage and you don't know what happens. So I love that one. So even being retired and old and broken, I enjoy the stage. And so many people are scared and like, no, that's bad. And I'm like, no, but you know, the whole feeling is still alive.
Yeah, I love that. So it doesn't even matter. So at least as long as you have the feeling, you're good.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And Khalida, we actually made the way all the way to the end of this episode. You saw
Fantastic.
me probably tearing up all the time. This story meant the world to me. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you for doing all this work. Yeah,
Yeah.
you really inspired me too, for sure, and touched my heart. And yeah, I really need to think about everything and put my life into perspective and, redefine what challenges really are. So, thank you for your inspiration. Thank you for inspiring the girls around the world to finding their purpose and
Thank
happiness. And now you get to close our episode here with a little TED Talk, a TED Talk, no, a little pep talk, like a motivation speech to all the girls and hopefully boys listening to us right now, why it is so important to never give up on your dreams.
I would say that, hey, listen, don't wait for others to define who you are, what you want in your life. You just let yourself to fail and learn. Failing is part of the journey. Never give up. It's okay you fail, and embraces that failure, and because that is helping you to move forward. And there is no perfect. There is no word of perfect. That doesn't exist in anything. So there is no perfect. Whatever you are, whoever you are, it's perfect. It's your own definition. Don't let other people to define you, to define what perfect is. So just don't, just do what you like to do, what your heart says. Do not harm people. Just what matters for you, follow your heart and see what matters for you, how that makes change in the world and your community. Follow that one.
Perfect ending. Thank you so much, girl.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate it.